It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon. Hope you're well and that your Monday is going as well as Mondays go. 51551 or ray@rte.ie to get in touch. Let me know if you got up to anything over the weekend. We were at the Dublin Horse Show on Saturday and I have to say it was absolutely brilliant. The crowds were massive. Kids were having a great time. Loads of stuff for them to do as well. I'm sure they were happy out looking at all the horses and the ponies. So well done to everybody involved and all the riders and all the horses as well. It really was. It was great. And it was a lovely day for it as well. The sun shone with a bit of rain. But yeah, I don't know about you. I definitely got the whiff of September in the air today. It's a little cooler. And the school WhatsApp groups, they're kicking up a notch, aren't they? And yesterday we were sorting out, trying to sort of gather the bits and pieces and find stuff that had been fired into the back of the cupboard, like the school bits and the school bags and all that. We will be talking school lunches a little later on and hopefully we can give you lots of ideas as to how to make things as easy as possible. I suppose especially if you've got picky eaters, and I think particularly for kids after a long summer, like routine has kind of gone out the window and it can be a bit of a slog trying to get them back into eating healthy and eating regularly. So hopefully you can get a few tips from that. That will be just before 4 o'clock. And I think we all have memories of our school lunchbox, don't we? Like, what are you? I'd love to hear your school lunchbox memories because I think things have changed slightly. I remember there was a girl and we used to be so jealous of her every day for 8 years. I'm kidding you. I'm not kidding you. She had sugar and butter sandwiches. And I used to be so jealous. And jam sandwiches were big back in the day as well. And actually, I was reading this morning about Queen Elizabeth and her love of jam sandwiches. She's eaten jam sandwiches every day of her life since she was a toddler, according to her former private chef, Darren McGrady. He says that she prefers a strawberry preserve made from fruits picked in her Balmoral Castle grounds in Scotland. And you know, when I was reading it, I was like, I haven't thought about jam sandwiches for the longest time. So let me know, are they still a thing in your house? I mean, I know kids still love them, but any adults out there who still eat jam sandwiches like the Queen, let us know. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And I suppose, yeah, just coming back to the lunchboxes, there was always somebody that you'd be jealous of when you looked inside their lunchbox. But I think, I don't know, does that still happen? Or I think possibly because most schools now have a no treats policy, it does make it slightly easier for everybody involved. Anyway, let us know your thoughts. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Staying with food for a second, I see Heinz are launching a new product and people online, lads, they're very excited about baked bean filled hash browns. There's a flurry of excitement about these. I mean, I can see how it works. They kind of look like fish fingers. It's essentially Heinz beans and fried potatoes when you think about it. A winning combination, I suppose, just in a different guise. What do you reckon? Does it sound delicious or disgusting? 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And of course, that opened up the conversation with us this morning about our favourite food combos, the odd food combos that we love. Sausages dipped in marmalade was one. Banana and rasher sandwiches. Roisin came out with the cracker, which I applaud her. You open a bag of cheese and onion crisps, cut up cubes of cheddar cheese, throw them in, add in your salted peanuts and sit back on the couch with your elasticated pants on and enjoy. I have to give that one a go. So anyway, let me know your odd food combinations that could be tickling your taste buds this Monday. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Somebody has texted in onion sandwiches. Yeah. My mother is a demon for a jam sandwich. I hate them, says another. Okay, keep them coming in. Awkward social moments. I think we've all had them. We've all had that. You know, you think back and you still shiver, whether it was like 3 years beforehand. You know, you maybe have forgotten somebody's name or you over-enthusiastically mistake them for somebody else. Mary, how are you? Oh, it's actually Denise. Well, it can happen to anybody, even Robbie Williams and Barbra Streisand. They both ended up sitting beside each other at a dinner and neither of them knew who the other one was. And Robbie was doing a radio interview for BBC over the weekend and he said he thought Barbra Streisand was, quote, a nice old lady. I mean, come on. Like, how do you not know who Barbra Streisand is? She's so beautiful and she's unique. She's Barbra Streisand. But she didn't have a clue who Robbie Williams was either. She thought he was a footballer or something. And so he said, no, I'm actually a singer. And she said, oh, that's nice. So let us know your most cringeworthy social moments. Now is the time to rid yourself of their burden. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And it reminded me of a tweet that I saw from Roisin Dunne, which I thought was brilliant. She tweeted, just been down to Tesco getting a sandwich and some crisps, and the lad at the checkout asked if I wanted to go for a drink. I told him, thanks, I have a boyfriend, and that I was flattered, but I couldn't. He said, no, it's part of the meal deal. You'll never catch me in that Tesco's again, said Roisin. Poor Roisin, we've all been there. So get them into me, those moments that still give you the shivers, the absolute mortification. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Now, we've recently seen some new images of space thanks to the James Webb Space Telescope. But now we have some new sounds from space. Last night, NASA tweeted this. The misconception that there is no sound in space originates because most space is a vacuum, providing no way for sound waves to travel. But a galaxy cluster has so much gas that we've picked up actual sound. Here it is, amplified and mixed with other data to hear a black hole. I mean, that's kind of eerie, isn't it? And people were saying last night that it was amplifying their Sunday night fear. But it's like fascinated everybody. It's clocked up more than 4 million views in the last 16 hours. Let's have another wee listen to it again if we can. Creepy. Yeah, the sound of space. All right, possibly not what we want to hear on a Monday. Let's get back to our happy place, and I reckon Tom Petty can get us there.
It was a beautiful day, sun beat down. I had the radio on, I was driving.
That is the wonderful Tom Petty. There is a lot of love for Tom Petty coming in, but not as much love as there are for jam sandwiches. My God, there are jam sandwich lovers all over the country still eating jam sandwiches and giving my daughter jam sandwiches when I'm making the lunch, no matter what the school says. I also used to get sugar sandwiches when I went to school. It's extraordinary to think of it now, says Hugh in Wicklow. I am smiling here eating my daily jam sandwich, just like the Queen, everyday raspberry jam sandwich. I loved a beetroot sandwich. I love a beetroot sandwich and a strong mug of Barry's tea with it. It's absolutely delicious, says Jackie. Maureen said, Catherine, I'm 63. When I was in primary school, my mum would make us mackerel and chips in paper bags. Ooh, and bring them down to us in school. There were no chippers in Bunmahan, County Waterford in the 60s. What a treat we had. Oh, I'd say you were the envy of everybody, Maureen. We played the black hole sound, the sound of space that NASA tweeted last night. Mary said, that black hole sounds like the wind blowing through my letterbox in winter. That black hole sounds like my splitting bad hangover. If that's the sound of a black hole, I'm disappointed. It sounds like someone flushing the loo. There you go. All right, keep them coming in. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. But let me tell you about our quiz today. Yes, we are reeling in the years. We have gathered up sounds and clips from over the years and decades, songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we are looking for two people to come on and answer three questions after 4 o'clock. There's a little twist, which you probably know at this point. We can play you a short clip, which gets you 2 points, or a long clip, which gets you 1 point. So if you are brave enough to take part today, let me tell you about the prize. So this week, we're giving you the chance to win a luxurious 2-night break in the Heritage. So you and a guest will enjoy breakfast on each morning and dinner on one evening in the award-winning Blake's Restaurant. So this is the luxurious Heritage Hotel, which is set in the pretty village of Killinard in County Laois, just over an hour's drive from Dublin. And it's the perfect place to discover Ireland's ancient East. So you can go to country estates like Emo Court, you can do the mountain trails and Slieve Loons, or you can have a bit of retail therapy in Kildare Village. Then you don't even have to leave the hotel if you don't want. There's a great spa there. They've also got their health club, afternoon tea, and they've got their own cinema for rainy days. How cool is that? So if you want to win that prize, all you've got to do is answer this question to begin with the chance to come on air. Man United and Liverpool face each other tonight in which English soccer league? Man United and Liverpool are playing each other tonight. What's the name of the English soccer league? Give us a call now, 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925. And as I said, we'll get two people up on air after 4 o'clock. Now, my first guest, 66-year-old Pat Lawless, has set himself a huge challenge, I think it's fair to say. He wants to become the first Irish person ever to sail solo non-stop around the world in a sailing race called the Golden Globe Race. It is also known as the Voyage of Mad Men. Sailors are not allowed to use any modern technology, no GPS, no phones. So they have to navigate using paper charts and a sextant to figure out the angle between the horizon and the sun or the moon or a star. So this is only the third time ever the race has been held. The first time was in 1968. It is also called the loneliest sporting event on the planet. Pat will set sail from France in September and he is already there preparing, and he joins me on the line now. Pat, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you, Catherine. Thank you for getting in touch with me.
Oh, well, listen, we had to have a chat about this. I mean, this just sounds like the adventure of a lifetime, and it sounds like that for some people, and it sounds like absolute arduous hell for others. So tell me, first of all, a little bit about yourself, Pat, and your background.
I was born in Limerick, and about 5 years after I got married, I moved to Dingle to become a fisherman, and I served my time as a cabinet maker before that with my father in a family furniture business.
Okay, so sailing wasn't really in the family, or was it?
Oh, it was. We were reared in the water. We were interbred into it. My father had boats, rowing boats and navogues and different kind of, not very posh boats, but yeah, we were reared on the River Shannon and places like that.
Okay, okay. And had he ever done anything like this before, or where did the desire, I suppose, to do something like this come from?
Well, my father had a good interest in sailing when we were young, and then when he retired a bit earlier than me, he sailed to America first, and then he sailed around the world, and that would have made it easier for me. So it's in the DNA, kind of, yeah.
Okay, so he sailed around the world, and how long did it take him?
He took 3 years. He stopped in plenty of places. He had more sense.
Okay, so the challenge...
He was 70 when he got back.
Oh my goodness. And like, were you able to keep in contact with him when he was away?
No, when he was at sea, no. But when he pulled in, yes. Like, I know he did 150-odd days. 156, I think, was his longest trip.
And I mean,
he would be out of contact. One time, he was out for way too long than we thought, but he had damaged a bit of his mast.
Okay.
And I was kind of worried, but they were asking me, and I was saying, no, he's fine. Yeah.
So, I mean, he brings back stories like that and I suppose plants the seed of adventure. And I mean, what an achievement, and also to do it when you're 70. So why do you want to do this, Pat? I mean, I said in the opener there, it's known as the Voyage of Mad Men and also the loneliest sporting event on the planet. It's a big decision to take on, because you're a family man as well.
I always dreamt of it. It's not dangerous. It's an ordeal, all right, but it's not dangerous. It'll be the fulfilling of a dream. And actually, most sailing races have turned into checkbook racing. So this is for the ordinary people. It's affordable now. It's expensive, but nothing compared to other ocean races. So,
How much is it costing you?
I thought I'd do it for 100,000, but it cost me over 200.
Wow. Okay, well, that's not small. That's not small change.
The mail system is working. You know, people are so kind. I got great support, huge support. So, and thank you to everyone.
Okay, so you some of that is your own money, obviously, and then some of it is sponsorship, and some of it is fundraising.
Yeah, about half and half.
Okay,
roughly.
Okay. That's expensive to fulfill a lifelong dream, I suppose. But so, tell me about the boat, because that's where you sink most of the money into. Excuse the pun.
A floating asset. The boat, I picked the boat for safety. It's a Saltram Saga 36. The boats have to be between 32 and 36 foot. And the longer the boat, the faster it is. So I went for the longest boat there is. Well, that's allowed. So I went for a safe boat. And actually, compared to the other boats in the race, it's okay. It's fast enough.
Okay. And so you're there in France at the moment. How are you filling the boat, packing the boat? So this is a 9-month race. Let's talk through the race. And when you say it's non-stop, like you're not able to sort of pull in and, you know, into a beautiful island and go to a laundrette and wash your clothes. Like you are on the... You're on
the more water. No, if you pull in for anything, you're out of the race.
If you pull in for anything, you're out of the race. So you are literally on the go for 9 months.
Pushing the boat as hard as you can.
So talk to me about how you survive on a boat like that, solo, with no modern technology. Like, talk to me about just even staying alive.
Well, water, we have to bring all our water with us, but we can harvest rainwater.
Right.
So I'll bring about 400 litres and I will harvest rainwater, hopefully, on the way around, because I need about 600, I suppose, litres to get around. I'll have to pick up another 200 litres of rainwater, roughly.
Okay. And food?
Because we're not allowed water makers or any modern equipment, I'm going with mostly canned food. And, like, I have bread mix and I have an alcohol cooker and I have one ring on it. And I have an oven that goes on top so I can bake bread and whatever. It's like a pot, but it's like a donut, like an omni oven. And so I can bake, so I have a lot of bread mixes. And when I started baking bread first, I was making this from scratch and it was dodgy old bread, but now the bread mix is great.
Well, you see, you can open up, you can set up your own bread company when you get home then. You'll be so good at it.
I don't think so. People wouldn't be too impressed.
Because I'd imagine every little thing, every tin that goes on the boat, because the heavier the boat, the slower you go.
Slower.
So
yeah.
You have to be like meticulous in terms of what goes on the boat and what doesn't.
Yeah, I'm erring on the side of caution. The first race, 9 started, 1 finished. And the second race, 18 started and 5 finished. So this race is about finishing.
Okay.
You have to finish to win, you know. So I'm erring on the side of caution. Now I'm trying to keep it as light as possible. But I've seen a lot of people who went too light and didn't finish.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many competitors are in the race, Pat?
I'd say 16 or 17 will make the start. 32 entered, but for different reasons, a lot of them didn't make it. And so I'd say 17, hopefully 17.
Okay. And who's the favourite?
Graham. Graham Dalton, New Zealand, won the America's Cup family. He would be up there.
Okay.
Damien is a Frenchman, a serious sailor, a professional sailor, like, and a fantastic boat. He would be another one.
Okay.
There's a guy just in front of me, Kristen from South Africa. I would rate her. I don't know what other people rate her, but, you know, I think her attitude and her boat are brilliant. And everyone has a chance, actually. You know,
and when you set off...
There's a bit of luck involved.
When you set off, the 17 of you or 15 of you or whatever's going to set off at the end, obviously that has to do with safety checks and some people will pass and some won't. When you're gone for the 9 months, it's not like you're going to be, you know, sailing. Do you ever see them from the start line to the finish line 9 months later?
Chances are no, we won't. We'll be in radio contact.
Okay.
And that, but the chances are we won't see each other during the race. So you're racing against yourself. There's a great tracker on the Golden Globe Race website, so you'll see my boat's name is Green Rebel. You'll find Green Rebel anywhere on the site, and it's a great name for an Irish boat, Green Rebel.
It is.
But
I like it.
It is, yeah.
So tell us the route, Pat.
So we'll leave France in the Bay of Biscay, and we'll go out around the corner of Cape Finisterre and down, and I'm going to go out of it there because there's problems with orcas, so I'll go off a bit outside the ship separation zone and down past the Canaries. And at the Canaries, we sail in to Shelter Bay in Lanzarote and for 20 minutes sailing along slowly under a reef mainsail, which is a small sail. For 20 minutes, we'll do media interviews. And then we go down past the Cape Verde Islands and across towards South America. There's an island off Brazil, Trinidad. We go west of that. And then we go below Africa, below Cape Town, the Cape of Good Hope, and across to Australia, and we go below Cape Louis there, and we go below Australia, we go below Tasmania. We sail up into Stormy Bay in Hobart and do another media stop there. And then we go below Tasmania and below South America around Cape Horn and up past the Falklands and up into Punta del Este in Uruguay for another media stop. And these media stops are awkward for us. We don't like them, but they're a part of the...
And just to explain that to the listeners, so because I read the press release earlier, you are allowed contact on your satellite phone with the media, but you're not actually in the whole of the 9 months allowed to contact your family.
No, for us. If I rang my wife, which I could, I'd be after the race. So yeah, hopefully I won't be tempted to do that. So we're allowed to ring the Golden Globe office itself at any time.
Okay.
We're allowed to ring a doctor. We have a medical kit that we pay for and a doctor on call, so we can ring doctor. And then media companies can get permission to phone us.
Okay.
During the race, yeah.
And I was about to say, when you were documenting the route there, like what's the most dangerous part? And I can imagine going around Cape Horn. I mean, all of the capes have their stories. But actually, the hardest part, I would imagine, is the mental strength it would take to do this on your own with not having any contact, the long days, being without your family, Christmas. Is that a big part of your training in terms of the last year or two?
Well, yeah, it is the unknown. You can't really train for it because I've never spent 9 months in isolation. The inside of the boat would be way smaller than your bedroom. So you have to have everything in here. You know, your bed is your seat, your table is your chart table, and, you know, everything, it's quite small. Like, imagine spending 9 months in your bedroom. And the carpet in the back of the boat is smaller than the double bed. It's 5 foot by 5 foot, and they're even smaller than that. So that's your back garden, I'd say. So it is the unknown. I don't think there'd be any problem whatsoever. Like, I have sailed 11,000 miles since I bought the boat solo, but not continuously, you know, 3 or 4 weeks at a time.
Mm.
It is the unknown, and I suppose there will be lonely times. Like, talking to my father, he found it lonely in the doldrums, in the heat, and the boat not moving, and... He said you get disorientated in the heat, you start thinking of his mother and start crying and things like that.
Tell me about your family, Pat. Who's at home?
My wife, Rita, and I have 4 children and 2 grandchildren. So 3 of the children live close to her, including the 2 grandchildren. And one, my youngest daughter, lives in Limerick with my wife's sister. So they're close, you know, and she has great support and great friends. And
I was about to say, how is Rita and how does she feel about this?
She's great. She's on her way here.
Okay, she's going to wait. She's waving you off.
Oh, she is. She's coming. All the family are coming. There's a big gang coming here for the 2 weeks up to the start.
Okay.
I think there's about 50 coming from the family and around the area.
I know she hasn't been well recently as well, Pat.
Well, yeah. We found out a few months ago that she has Parkinson's.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, we're getting emotional. She's huge support. I said I wouldn't go, and she said you have to go. And yeah, so it's a tough one.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's very selfless of her. And, you know, this has been something that you've planned for so long. And that's a toughie.
It is a big one. Very healthy. Now, she's great. She's fine. You know, she's very early stages. Got medication, but out of the blue, like, I never ever expected it. You know, it was a shock.
Mm-hmm. And you are going to raise money for Parkinson's as well, then?
I am, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've opened a page, yeah, for Parkinson's. I donate Pat Laws. And the people are great. So I think there's 600 and something got into it already. Only up a few days ago.
And this wasn't, I mean, as you said, nobody saw this coming. You hadn't planned to raise money for Parkinson's. Obviously, Rita has been diagnosed recently. But look...
No, I was going to pair with some charity, but that made that decision easy anyway.
Wow. Look, that's the strength of family, you know? When, you know, she knows you need to do this. You know you need to do it. The kids are all there. And... Would you say it's planning this, has it brought you closer together in a way? I mean...
Oh, definitely, yeah. She's so supportive. And now, we were always close, but we're way closer, even before the Parkinson's came up. Like, it bonded us in a great way. You know, she's been so fantastic there.
So will the hardest part be, I mean, maybe this is a stupid question, but being away from her, being away from the kids?
I'd say so, yeah. And my mother is 94, and that, so you will worry about things, but it's only in the calm weather you have time to think. Like, during a race like this, your job is to push the boat 24/7. So you're flat out as hard as you physically can, keep the boat moving as fast as you can for 24 hours a day.
Mm.
So you're actually quite occupied. You know, you don't get time to dwell on stuff except when there's calm weather. I think that's why my father struggled there. And I struggled, but you know,
Listen, you're some man for one man is all I can say. I think it's absolutely incredible. The fact that you have there's no technology. Am I right in saying it's the technology they had in 1968?
That's right, Jeff. And the first moon, the first rocket was going to the moon. It's that technology. And it's okay. The technology is quite good, actually. And we have a lot of safety items.
Okay.
You know, we have all the modern EPIRBs, and like we have the sat phones, we have the trackers, and we have AIS and alarms. We can't see the other boats, but an alarm will go off if there's a radar sweeps us or an AIS. So you stick your head up and see where the ship is, and you hope it's not going to be foggy.
Well, listen, all we can do is wish you the best. And I know we're going to stay in touch with you here on the Ray D'Arcy Show. And it's kind of bizarre that you can kind of call media, but you can't call your family. But we'll be delighted to hear from you. We're going to keep in touch with you over the next couple of months and see how you're getting on. And brilliant.
Excellent.
And
thank you very much.
Great
Catherine.
Adventure. Wishing you all the best on lunch.
Everyone in Ireland. Okay.
Thanks so much, Pat.
Bye.
Pat
bye,
Lawless,
bye.
Back after this.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Lots of good wishes and well wishes coming into Pat Lawless there, who I was chatting to about his solo adventure sailing around the world nonstop for 9 months. I mean, what a man. And we're going to keep in touch with him. We let you know how he goes and how he gets off from France. He's leaving on the 4th of September. So we'll keep an eye on him there. All right. We were chatting to presenter Michael Cahill on Friday about him learning to swim later in life, something which had filled him with fear as a child. But he mastered it. He's delighted with himself. And today I'm joined by two ladies who are proving that it is never too late. They are part of the Silver Swans, who are a group of over 55s who take part in weekly ballet sessions, which gives you a full body workout, the ladies tell me, and also a great bit of crack. I'm joined in studio by Silver Swan, Deirdre Handy, and on the line is the principal of the Odette School of Ballet, Emma Mahoney. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
Deirdre, it's lovely to see you. I have Deirdre, as I said, in studio with me. But Emma, I'm going to come to you first because, as I said, you're the principal. You were the lady who had this idea. You wanted to get it up and running. But first of all, tell me about your background in dance.
Brilliant. So I'm a Royal Academy of Dance trained ballet teacher.
Yeah.
And I teach, you know, all ages. And then about 5 years ago, the Royal Academy of Dance had this idea of introducing the Silver Swans programme. And the training was over in London. So I flew straight over and trained and brought us. I was the first teacher in Ireland to offer the classes. And I suppose the classes started very small. We had 3 people the first term. But as the years went on, the classes have filled. We've now got 3 classes that are usually full every week. And dozens of Silver Swan students, so it's just been brilliant to see it grow.
Am I right in saying of the 3 women that turned up on the very first day, one of them was your mother?
My mum, yes. Who is one of the lovely Silver Swans who had never done ballet or any dancing before, but kind of got roped into it as I needed students. And she's stuck it out now, so she's one of our most experienced dancers now.
Brilliant. And did you say that the idea originally come from the Royal Academy of Dance in London?
Yeah, so that's one of the biggest training schools globally. And they started to roll out this idea. And it's been brilliant because it means you've got kind of proper training behind you, because it's quite a different ballet class than your usual one that you might teach to young children. So it's great to have these licensed teachers. So if you go to a Silver Swans class, you know you've got a good professional teacher offering the class.
So how many did you say are happening at the moment, Emma?
So I teach 3 classes a week. One in Dance House in town, and that's a midday class, and you can drop in, you can come and go as suits you. And then I teach two on a Saturday, and they're a term class, so they're quite different. So you sign up for 6 weeks, and you work on the same thing as the weeks progress.
Okay. And what sort of a student is Deirdre?
Deirdre is in Dan's house, one of our lovely drop-in students, but she comes, I'd say, weekly at this stage now.
Okay. Well, Deirdre, it's lovely to chat to you. And Emma has kind of set the scene for us there. So how did you, are you a dancer? Had you danced before?
Well, you know, just much the same as anybody else, a bit of Irish dancing, a bit of contemporary dance. I'd been doing contemporary dance classes for a while, but ballet was something that I had wanted to do since I was a little girl.
Okay.
And a friend mentioned it to me that she was going to classes for older people.
Okay.
And I decided to give it a go, and it's just fantastic.
So when did you start?
I started in October 2019.
Okay.
So initially I was able to go to the studio, to Dance House in Foley Street. And then, of course, because of COVID, the classes had to move online.
Yeah.
And so every week we just did our best in our sitting rooms or kitchens or whatever, using a chair as the bar and so forth.
And do you wear the full ballet stuff, the tutu, the leotard, everything?
No.
Okay.
Thankfully, no. I mean, as Emma just says, just wear what is comfortable to dance in.
Yeah.
Now, most of us do wear tights and, a T-shirt or something like that. But certainly we leave the tutus at home.
Okay. But a bit like you, I mean, I never did ballet as a kid. And I always loved, when I saw girls in ballet class, I just thought it must be lovely to feel like a ballerina. You know, I did gymnastics and football and horse riding and other bits and pieces. But I always wondered what it must be like to feel like a ballerina. What does it feel like to be a ballerina?
Well, you can imagine yourself when you're at the class, you imagine that you're going to be able to sort of leap across the studio and, you know, do all these wonderful things that you see Darcy Bustle doing. Now, of course, that isn't quite the reality, but it is still wonderful. You know, there's a great discipline involved in ballet, and we do have to learn the correct positioning for arms and feet and so forth.
Okay.
And you just try to push yourself that little bit further.
And Deirdre, I never said at the beginning what age you are. Are you happy to say what age you are?
Yes, quite. 78 now, so I started ballet at 75.
Yes, see, this is what I love. And you had been doing dance before, contemporary dance before that.
Yes.
So have you always been somebody who's kind of kept fit or tried different things or?
I'm not sure that I looked upon it as kind of keep fit as such. I mean, that wasn't such a thing when I was growing up. And I didn't really do much in the way of sports. But I do love walking. And
okay.
So a few years ago, I started walking with a group, and I enjoy that very much. But certainly the ballet is just, as you said at the beginning, a fantastic workout. You think you're doing nothing just standing there, but really you can feel that you've worked your muscles to a great extent.
So would you have noticed physical changes in your body, like toned arms, toned legs?
Well, I suppose there is.
Because looking at you now, you're extremely fit looking. Like you do not look your age.
Thank you very much. I would definitely think that your posture improves, and I certainly feel more flexible than I would have felt before starting ballet.
Yeah.
So yes, I think it does create a difference.
And isn't that what everybody says? Or like, I mean, that's the holy grail, to have mobility, have flexibility as you age. It's the key to kind of staying fit and healthy.
Absolutely. Yes. And of course, ballet does help with the balance as well, which comes from the strength of your muscles. And so if you're using your muscles, then it's going to help your balance as well.
So, I love it. I love it. And I have to say, Emma, I'm going to bring you back in here. So Deirdre is 78. So what are the ages? And this is just like, it's such a great message. And a bit like what Michael was saying, it's never too late
to
start.
Mm-hmm.
What are the average ages in the class, Emma?
So I always say it's open to over 55.
Okay.
And sometimes that means someone who's 52 or 53 might contact me and say they feel too old for, you know, an adult ballet class, but can they come? And they're always more than welcome to come. So as well as being not too old, you're not too young either.
Mm-hmm.
And then I suppose kind of from around 55 up, I don't even think there is an average, you know, because there's just such a range. And like, you know, if Deirdre had never told me her age, I never would have guessed it.
You so, weren't as rude to ask her like me.
You know, I always find a silver swan. There's something really magical about it because everyone comes at different stages in their life.
Yeah.
And for their own different reasons. And we're all kind of in this unusual space for some people, a dance studio. And then everyone does the same thing. So it brings everyone together despite the different ages. So I'd never let... I never encourage someone to avoid it because of an age.
Yeah. And what about experience? Deirdre said, you know, Deirdre, you had danced before. What about people who'd never danced coming to the classes?
That's the most people would never have danced before. And then there's a handful of people that did a bit when they were younger. And then I've been lucky enough to teach some people that were ballet teachers when they were working as well. So it's just brilliant. But I'd say most people have never tried it until they walk in the door. Mm. And then... suddenly have the opportunity to do a ballet class. It's great.
And there's a performance element in it as well, Deirdre.
Yeah.
And there is a, I suppose, a camaraderie when you're, the social side of it must be great, great fun.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, we all feel we're in the same boat, you know, just learning something.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's no... you don't feel embarrassed in front of anybody else if you make a total hash of something. It's just great fun, and we have a good chat together before or after the class, or, you know, at a little break within the class.
The class as well. Mm. And on average, like, how many people? I suppose it depends on the day, but would there be like 5 or 6 people in the class? Or
I think we usually have a few more than that, maybe more like 8 or 10.
Okay.
And I'm sure there are even more than that actually registered, but, you know, they don't always come every week.
Okay.
So
how many times a week are you turning up?
Well, I just go to the one class, but I do go every week.
Okay.
You know, unless there's something really extraordinary that stops me from going. I would hate to miss it.
Yeah. It's become part of your week now.
Yeah.
And I think it's fantastic. Deirdre, lovely to chat to you. Emma, where can people find out about it?
So through my website would be the best place. And that's www.theodetteschoolofballet.ie.
Okay. And for anybody listening out there, Emma, who may be thinking about it, like what, I suppose, advice or what little bit of encouragement might you give them?
I'd say just absolutely come along. It's a really welcoming atmosphere. And not only do you kind of get fit and healthy, but the element of artistry and movement makes it a little bit different to some other activities. You know, you're dancing, you're really... feeling the music, and there's all these extra layers to it, but it's different to other activities.
Okay.
So just try it.
Give it a go, Deirdre. I'd say you'd second that, would you?
Absolutely. Totally.
All right. Girls, thank you so much for joining me today. Have a lovely afternoon. Back after this. We were talking about food combinations and your favourite odd or strange food combos. Cheddar cheese and marmalade. I love that, says somebody. Anne said sausages and marmalade. Marmalade is coming up a lot. Our granddaughter, Alana, makes the most fantastic healthy lunch boxes for herself. When she was in senior infants, her teacher remarked on her smoked salmon wrap, complete with a wedge of lemon, if you don't mind. Best wishes to Alana. She's starting secondary school on Monday next, and our other granddaughter, Anya, on Wednesday coming. And that comes in from Jim and Liz. And then a lot of love coming in for Pat Lawless as well. Great interview. All the best from all the sailors in Mount Shannon on Loch Derg. Pat Lawless, his brother Pete, is also setting off shortly to sail solo non-stop around the world, although he is not in a race. My late wife Olivia and I sailed around the world in 9 years, and that comes in from Pat in Sutton. All right, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Keep your texts coming in, and we have a lot of lunchbox texts coming in. The reason being, Deirdre Doyle is sitting in front of me now, who is food educator and children's cookbook author, and she is also going to be our school lunchbox saviour.
I don't know about that, Catherine.
It's lovely to see you. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, good. And I suppose, look, I think there's two houses. There's, I mean, the school, the idea of packed lunchboxes will be striking the fear of God into parents across Ireland.
Yep.
So we wanted to ease the help a little bit with that. And I think it might be worth saying to people, if they're listening, to grab a pen and paper, because we're going to give a few tips and give some recipes. But you do have one secret to solve it all for us.
I do, Catherine. This is the secret. So people, put your listening ears on. This is what I say to the kids in classes. my top secret, and Alana, that message from Alana that just came through revealed it all, is to get your kids to make their own school lunches.
Okay.
So write that in capitals on your piece of paper, people, and get them ready. I'm challenging the children of the country to start making their own school lunches this September.
From what age?
Well, I think they can start making them from junior infants. Okay. I know people are going,
What? I mean, that's what I'm saying. It kind of sounds risk-free, but I'm imagining lunchboxes filled, certainly like in my house, with crisp sandwiches and Skittles.
Yeah.
Just so, don't have those in the cupboards.
Don't have that. Well, exactly. So there is a rule of feeding called the Division of Responsibility in Feeding. It's written by an American feeding guru called Ellen Sater. And what she says is that as parents, we have the responsibility of providing the food that we want our children to eat.
Mm-hmm.
They have the responsibility of eating it. So when we talk about the children making their own school lunches, what I mean is we as the parents have the responsibility of providing them with the food that we want them to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So not the crisps and not the Skittles. So no crisp sandwiches. Well, mm-hmm. unless you want your children to eat that, then off mm-hmm. you go. But we provide them with the food that we want them to eat. And then they choose what they want to eat and they make up their school lunches. And the reason why it works is because like anything that you do to get kids involved in the kitchen, they're so much more likely to eat what they make.
Yes, because they're not checking into sandwiches to see what's in any yeah. kind of little secret yeah. hidden-y bits.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
they're in control.
They are in control.
Okay, yeah. so they're more likely to eat it.
They're more likely
to eat
sense.
It. It makes sense.
So there's no surprises.
So you provide all the main ingredients, the bread, the cheese, the yogurt, the fruit, whatever it is, and then they pick and choose.
Absolutely.
How it
yeah.
happens.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so are we talking about kids doing this the night before? Because I can just imagine now me bringing this into the kitchen next week. And I mean, it's already a nightmare to try and get out the door at yep. 20 to 9.
Yeah.
So unless we get up at 5:30.
There's no need for that. I did make my kids' lunches. And now, even now, so I have one gone into fifth class, one's gone into first year. So my fellow that's gone into fifth class, Charlie. Hi, Charlie. Hope he's listening. He's been making his own school lunches since he was in junior infants.
Right.
Senior infants, maybe. But we always made them the night before.
Okay.
Now, I know everybody doesn't like doing that. So what I suggest doing is that you have everything ready to go. So if they're making a ham and cheese sandwich, you have the ham cut ready to go. You have the cheese ready to go.
Gotcha.
And then in the morning, they just pop it into two slices of bread or into a roll or whatever like that.
Okay.
And you can put all the things like the fruit and all that can already be in the lunchbox. But just making the sandwich, you could make that really quickly on the morning of. I was actually at the Tullow Agricultural Show yesterday and I met a lady who has six children.
Right.
And she's like, oh my gosh, like there's no way I could make the lunches in the morning going out to school. So she makes hers the night before.
Yeah.
So it's whatever suits.
And it's perfect. And there's so many, I suppose, now with, you know, nobody wants to be using plastic the yeah. way the lunchboxes are now. Talk to us about that, because there's lots of different options in terms of wrapping, in terms
yeah,
of keeping
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
fresh.
Yeah.
There's compartment lunchboxes.
Yeah. Yeah. So you see lots and lots of lunchboxes on Instagram that are the little compartment lunchboxes, and they're great because you can give the kids a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
And there's no bits leaking into.
There's no bits leaking. Yeah. 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 I'm not quite sure how that technology works, but it seems to work. I sell reusable sandwich bags, reusable snack bags that you can use as well.
Great.
So yeah, I think there's a real move away from the likes of your cling film and your tin foil and everything like that, which is great because that's
absolutely.
Yeah.
So talk to us then about actual ideas, I suppose, and ingredients that we can use, because I suppose the big thing that we like to think that we can do is provide something outside of the ham and cheese sandwich. Like I know with my one, she like a ham sandwich, that's what she loves, but the crust's cut off.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to sort of widen the appeal now.
Widen the appeal, yeah, I know. And I think sometimes we as parents fall into the trap of thinking that our children need to have a different lunch every single day, and mm-hmm. it needs to look like the Instagram lunches, that needs to look beautiful and balanced and all that. Personally, I think you could give them the most beautiful lunch in the world, but if they're not going to eat it, you're getting no benefit from it.
Yes.
So what I do in my house is that my daughter is much better. She'll take a much bigger variety, but my son will take a lot of the same food all the time. And he will take that sandwich pretty much every day.
Okay.
But then when he comes home, I'll give him all sorts of different foods at home. So we have to remember the school lunch is only one small meal in the day.
Yes.
So you can add lots of variety
yeah.
to all the other meals. Like there's at least another two, if not three meals mm-hmm. outside of the school lunch that you can add variety to. So if they will only take the one sandwich, well, maybe that's okay.
Mm.
You know, it's we're the ones who are stressing about it, not the kids.
Yes.
And it has to be something that they're happy to eat in school.
Yeah.
And that they don't, because, and they don't feel uncomfortable eating. And, you know, the variety we can give them outside of
the school. That's good. That's worth thinking about.
Yeah.
Again, substituting bread or wraps, substituting for muffins as well. I know you've got a recipe on that. So I suppose it's just to widen the kind of, because kids, a lot of kids will try stuff. We just get into the routine of making the same sandwich every day.
I know. I'm thinking of different things. Yeah. So one thing I definitely recommend is that there's protein in the lunchbox.
Yep.
So in whatever form that might be. So I do have a lovely recipe in my cookbook. I wrote a kid's cookbook over lockdown. Sure, what else should we be doing?
You were getting lots of practice for it anyway.
Yeah. Called Chop Cook Yum. And I have a recipe in there for, I call them egg and spinach cheese muffin thingies because I couldn't think of a better name for them. But they're really easy to make. They're something you can make on a Sunday evening. So they're ready to go for the week ahead. You can freeze them. So that's always a great thing.
Yep.
You literally just chop up some spinach, grease a muffin tin really well because otherwise they stick. Throw in some spinach, throw in some cheese, whisk some eggs, pour that in over them, bake them for 10 to 12 minutes. The kids can do all of that. It's in my kids' cookbook, so the kids can do all of that themselves.
Love that. And they freeze really well.
And they freeze really well. Yeah, okay. So you can pop them in the freezer and have them ready to go throughout the week if you're looking to add a bit of variety or a little bit of something different.
Okay. And then also, I love the idea that you had that you can have snacks post-school as well. So it's that time when they're starving coming out of school and they're either going to football or going to wherever.
Yeah. So I used to always, my kids are older now, but I used to always have a car picnic with me for when I pick them up from school, because inevitably we are going, as you said, to swimming, we're going to football, we're going to wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I would bring lots of variety and different things into their diet that they may not have had in their lunchbox. So boiled eggs that they wouldn't bring into school, different fruits and vegetables, hummus.
Soup is a good one as well.
Soup is a great one.
Get the veggies, sneak the veggies in that way.
Sneak the veggies in that way.
Okay, love it. Well, listen, the book again is called Chop Cook Yum. And that's what you're saying. Get the kids involved. Make it a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Do it the night before for most of us. That's what I'm going with. Deirdre Doyle, it's been lovely to chat to you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Catherine.
Lee in Dublin 3 says, my sister used to eat fried potatoes and yogurt sandwiches. Now, that is an interesting one. That's kind of like an Irish take on an Indian delicacy. I love Branston pickle sandwiches, said somebody else. I'm a primary teacher for all parents, particularly of younger kids. Please stop sending Corner Crunch yogurts and frubes that kids can't open. They end up all down the front of their uniforms or all over the floor. Keep it simple. Healthy foods that kids like, a good sandwich, fruit, a drink or anything else that they like, provided they are easily accessible and easy to open. Also, practice with kids opening and closing lunchboxes. That is a good tip, I have to say. The practicing opening and closing. Okay, lots more coming in, but I want to get to our quiz today. Let me tell you about it. We have two people on the phone ready to battle it out. We have Liam Dillon and we have Denise O'Reilly, and we're going to hear from them in a couple of seconds. But we are playing songs, news reports, TV shows and movies, and the year this year is 1986. So be thinking about that, lads. 1986. The guys can choose a short clip, which will get them 2 points, or a long clip, which will get them 1 point. And they are playing for a 2-night break in the Heritage Hotel in lovely Killinard, County Leash. It's just over an hour's drive from Dublin. It is the perfect base to discover Ireland's ancient East. You can check out beautiful country estates such as Emo Court. There's mountain trails in the Slieve Bloom. You've got retail therapy options in Kildare Village, and there's also plenty to do without even leaving the Heritage, whether you want to indulge in a spa treatment or have a lovely afternoon tea or visit the health club. And they've also got their own cinema as well. So that is what is up for grabs today. And as I said, it's Liam and Denise battling it out this afternoon. Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Good afternoon, Catherine. How are you?
Good. Liam, can you hear us?
Yes, I can indeed.
Loud and clear.
Thank you. I'm great.
Good. Well, you are player number one, Liam, so we're going to come to you first. So you're great. And where in the country are you calling from?
Just outside Fermoy, County Cork.
Happy days. And what are you getting up to this Monday?
Well, I'm just cooking a bit of grub for the dinner.
Oh, look at you. What's on the menu? What's on the menu for tonight?
Chicken?
Yeah, well, a bit more detail.
A chicken stir fry, just chicken and vegetables. Something pretty simple now. I'm not a cordon bleu.
But do you enjoy cooking?
I do. But I don't, like I say, it's all basic stuff.
Okay. Well, that's kind of, you know, chicken, vegetable.
I've just started a diet, actually, so I better, if Sinead is listening to me, I'm not cooking chips.
And who are you, so who are you cooking for?
My daughter and her partner and my granddaughter.
Lovely, lovely. What's your granddaughter's name?
Laura.
Ah.
She's a year and 5 months. She's absolutely gorgeous.
Ah, well, listen, brilliant. They're lucky to have you cooking a nice dinner, nice dinner like that.
At my weight, are you right?
And are you working, Liam? Are you retired? Or?
I'm retired, really, but I work part-time at the local resource centre in Tremoy.
Okay, brilliant.
I do some admin work there, nothing too strenuous.
Good. Okay, so you're taking life nice and slow and keeping busy.
Ah, yeah. I'm doing a bit.
All right, Liam, hang on the line there. Denise, where are you calling from?
Catherine, I'm calling from Wicklow Town.
Wicklow Town. And what is going on in Wicklow Town today? Are you working? Are you chilling out? Or?
No, I don't work anymore. I am. Youngest son is getting ready to go back to school, getting the dinner, looking after the parents, just doing bits and pieces.
Well, you are working then.
Yes.
You're working hard. So he's getting ready to go back to school. How are you on the school lunch front?
School lunch front, whatever they eat, they get in their lunch boxes. Don't experiment with lunches.
Okay, yeah, exactly. Keep it easy.
Keep it simple.
And where do you stand on the jam sandwich debate, which has been spiralling here?
Oh, yes, like jam sandwiches, but preferably sugar and batch bread.
Ooh, okay, very good. So you're busy, you're getting everybody organised. Did you get to go away this summer or would a trip to Dublin?
Yes.
You did?
No, we did. We were in California for a couple of weeks.
Lovely.
It was fabulous.
Whereabouts?
Yeah, it was fabulous. We started in San Francisco and ended up in LA.
Oh, the Pacific Coast Highway.
Yes.
Lovely.
Yeah. Stunning.
Lovely. Fab. And did you have family there or were you...
Yes, my husband has family out there, so that we were very lucky we had our accommodation sorted.
Great. And did the kids go?
They did, yes. One came with the youngest guy, was with us all the time, and then the three others kind of flew in and out.
Lovely. Brilliant.
What
a treat. What a treat.
It was.
Okay, yeah. Liam and Denise, good luck to both of you. Do you want to wish each other the best of luck?
Good luck,
all
Liam.
The best, Denise. God bless. Good luck.
All right, Liam, as I said, you are player number one. So let's start with you. How are you feeling about the year? It's 1986.
Well, I was a young fella, ish.
Right. So you're going to know it all. You're going to know it all.
I don't know about that.
All right, let's see how you want to play this one. This is the movie question. Do you want to go long or short?
So go short.
Go short. Go on. Give it a lash. So this is for 2 points. This American action film, directed by Tony Scott and starred Tom Cruise and Kelly McGillis, with Cruise playing Lieutenant Pete Maverick Mitchell. Can you name the movie?
We happened to see a MiG-28 do a 4G negative dive.
Do you know the movie, Liam?
Top Gun.
Yes. Well done. The Maverick name would have given it to me before the clip even, but well done for you. That's 2 points. Denise, back to you. It is 1986. Your movie question, do you want to go long or short?
Short, please, Catherine.
Okay, for 2 points. This 1986 teen comedy film was written and directed by John Hughes and starred Matthew Broderick, Mia Sara and Alan Ruck. It tells the story of a high school slacker who skips school, but can you name the film?
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while...
Would it be Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yes, Denise, you got it. You got it. You know your 80s, lads. That's good. Okay, Liam, back to you. You're 2-2, neck and neck. This is your music question. Do you want to go long or short?
Yeah, I go for two. Short, does it again? Please.
Short, you're going to go short. See, you were out and about. You were giving it socks as a young fella in 1986. So I think you're going to know this one. This song was incredibly popular in 86. Can you name either the song or the singer? Never seen you looking so lovely as you did
tonight. Christopher,
yes,
Lady in Red.
Lady in Red. Do you remember the slow set, Liam?
I do indeed. I do indeed.
Where did you have your favourite slow set?
The Hammersmith Palais. I was living in London at the time.
There you go. Brilliant. Well done, you. 2 points in the bag. Denise, back to you. This is your music question. Long or short?
Short, please, Catherine.
Okay. This song was also at the top of the Irish charts in 1986. Can you name the song or the singer?
Catherine, Chain Reaction.
Yes, guys, Diana, you are on fire. That is Chain Reaction, Diana Ross. Okay, so Liam, your last question. This is in the news. Do you want to go long or short?
I'll go short again.
Okay, this is to try and get top points. You're playing so well, guys. Well done. 1986, Liam. Argentina won the FIFA World Cup, but can you name their captain?
Or was it a use of the hand that England are complaining about?
Diego Maradona.
That's it. That's it. Even I knew that one. Is that the hand of God?
The hand of God.
The hand of God.
Yeah.
That's it. God, was that 1986? My, oh my. Okay, that's it. Well done. Full points on the board for you, Liam. That means, Denise, you got to answer this. You got to go short and you got to answer it correctly in order to stay in the game, okay? So this
is for
2 points. No pressure whatsoever.
No pressure.
All right, good luck. This is in the news. In 1986, controversy surrounded the birth of a baby girl born in Dublin. She was the first baby born in Ireland as a result of what new scientific breakthrough?
The programme is, of course, controversial and is now scheduled for discussion by the hospital authorities at the end of the month.
All right, Denise, 1986.
Was she a test tube baby?
Oh, you need to be a bit more specific.
IV.
Yes, yes, yes.
IV.
In vitro fertilisation. Well done. So that is 6 points each across the board. That is full marks. So that means we are going to go to a tiebreaker. And let me just make sure I have this right here. Yes, it's a tiebreaker. And before you came on air, we asked you this question. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to cycle from Dundalk, County Louth, to Newbridge, County Kildare? Can you remember what you said, Liam?
I can.
Yeah, what did you say?
3 hours, 40 minutes.
You said 3 hours, 40 minutes. Denise, can you remember what you said?
I did, yes, but you have to remember I'm coming via Wicklow.
Right.
I said 8 hours and 2 minutes.
Which means, Denise, with that length of a journey, you're going to need 2 Ray Darcy Show mugs to keep the coffee going because you were way out. You were way out. The answer is 5 hours, 40 minutes, which means that, Liam, you are the winner today. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
As I said, Denise, well done.
Hard luck, Denise, hard luck.
Great scores, lads. That was great, great playing, great general knowledge. The 1980s obviously suited you. So, Denise, well done. Liam, that means you are our winner today. Who are you going to take to the Heritage Killinard?
I haven't a clue because I'm a widower, so I'll... there's loads of women in Thames Street nutrition. Maybe I'll take one of them.
Your phone is going to light up now, Liam. Everyone will be delighted.
We'll see.
And especially now that you've announced to the nation a cordon bleu chef as well.
Yeah, I have. But a bear wouldn't hug me.
Thanks for taking part today.
All right.
Well done.
All right.
Thank you.
Back after this.
Okay.
The
Bye-bye.
Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I am a giant. Stand up on my shoulders. Tell me what you see. Cause I am a giant. We'll be breaking borders. Breaking borders underneath our feet.
under me, yeah, yeah. I'm gonna shake, throw the weight in the dirt under me, yeah. I'm gonna shake, throw the weight in the dirt, yeah. I'm gonna shake, throw the weight in the dirt, yeah. I'm gonna shake, throw the weight in the dirt, yeah. I'm gonna shake, throw the weight in the dirt.
Me and Connor chatting about travel, yeah. yet again. Connor Pope, it is Monday afternoon. It is time for Price Watch. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Great to be back.
Good. Good to have you back. You had a nice few days off, a nice few weeks.
Oh, well, no, a few weeks might be a stretch. I was in Spain for a week in a campsite that I've been to every year for 5 years. So that was brilliant to be back, particularly after 2020 and 2021. And then we were in Portugal for a couple of weeks before that, which was also great. Because
nice.
I'd also paid for both holidays in 2020. So they got rolled over.
So they
by
were rolled
both
over.
Companies. So it was like a free holiday.
Okay. And are you still, are your family, do they still want to go with you?
Yes. Now, I'm very lucky because I have three amazing children, three amazing girls, and they're all very happy to go on holidays with me still. And I kind of was afraid that maybe my teenagers wouldn't be because they've got a little bit older. And we were supposed to go on holidays in 2020, but then or overseas, but we didn't. And then 2021, but we didn't. So I kind of thought they might become a bit too cool to go on holidays with their mammy,
yes.
daddy, or their
and it is was a big concern for families, like trying to get those last couple of years.
Because it's
with
a really
their,
precious time,
yeah.
you know, that whole time, because you're totally immersed together as a family on
yeah.
holidays. And I think that's the really special thing about it for us. But luckily, they were still happy enough to go down the slides and behave like
and
they
hang
were,
out with you.
And hang out.
And hang out with you. There you go. So listen, your piece in the Times today, roaming charges haven't gone away.
Yeah.
I thought roaming charges had gone away.
And they have for a lot of places. So if you're travelling within the European Union, thanks to the European Commission, they abolished roaming charges. Like, and back like 10, 15 years ago, they were an absolute scourge and they were a scandal. Like if you made a 2 minute call from Paris home, it was a fiver. Or if you were in Malta and you made the same 2 or 3 minute call, you'd be spending a tenner. But the European Commission just said, ah, lads, you're having a laugh. You can't be doing that. Because if you're,
yep.
if it's the European Union, that has to mean something. So they scrapped roaming charges eventually across the European Union. But that doesn't mean they're gone. So a couple of readers got in touch with me in the Irish Times. One had travelled to Canada, or his daughter travelled to Canada, and managed to rack up a bill of thousands of euro over the course of 2 days by through data charges, because they were just watching Netflix or YouTube or whatever it might be, and you're in that mindset that there's no charges. And then
so
another family went to Australia and racked up even more.
So talk to me then about data, like uploading. So this is a movie on Netflix or something, is
that
it?
That kind of thing. So like we have no, so they might say, okay, the roaming charges are €2 per megabit. But like megabit
nobody
or megabyte
understands
doesn't
what
make
that
it,
is. Yeah.
We don't know what that stuff means. So it does mean that you might watch a film on Netflix on your phone, or you might watch something, a YouTube video that lasts for 30 minutes or whatever. And you might end up, it might end up costing you like 700 quid. And there was one famous incident, and this is going back a few years, when a woman watched an episode of Lost on her phone using overseas roaming, and it cost her €60,000, which is probably how much it cost to make the episode of Lost. But so it's
what?
That kind of charge that people need to be acutely aware of. And the infuriating thing is that all the mobile phone companies across the world charge these ridiculous fees for roaming, and it doesn't cost them that amount. Like, so if I'm using 10 minutes of data, if I'm on watching a YouTube video for 10 minutes, it doesn't cost the company 200 quid. So they're just making this money. And if you know it in advance, you can sign up to deals that will slash the costs by 90, 95, 98%. But you have to know it in advance, which is why it's important to talk about it.
And I think that's the other thing as well. I mean, as you said, within the EU, new regulations were brought in, but it's travel from outside as well.
Outside the European Union.
And it's, again, like my aunt came over from Canada there 2 weeks ago, and you sort of forget. I said, oh, listen, give us a call. And she was like, I'm not calling you. You know, she was there was such a panic. The phone
exactly,
was off.
Exactly.
So she didn't even, you know, normally you'd ring from when she landed in the Dublin Airport. She had her phone off, like airplane mode, the entire time that she was here. And then obviously when she got to our house, she linked into the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But is that the only way of
no,
really...
if you do a deal with your provider,
before
like all
you go.
Of the providers will say, you can sign up for a special travel package mm-hmm. that will give you a discount on your roaming. That's, like, as I say, up to 99% off the charge they will impose if you don't sign up for the deal. So that's what you need to do, but you need to be very proactive about it, or it will end up costing you an arm and a leg.
Okay, all right. Listen, I'm going to get through straight on to our problem, which was sent in. Connor, in June 2020, I purchased an electric toothbrush which cost €140, which was hefty enough for an electric toothbrush. It was actually marked down from €260. I finished charging it a couple of days ago. The replacement head cannot sit securely on the base anymore. I contacted the shop and quoted all the obvious, i.e. Sale of Goods Act, and was requesting a refund, repair or replacement, and have been met with no assistance. They have advised that my responsibility lies with the manufacturer, as I'm now outside the 2-year warranty. I've stated that my contract is with Boots and not the manufacturer, and under EU and Irish legislation that when you purchase a product, it must be conformity with the contract and abide by the Sale of Goods Act. Can you advise if I have a leg to stand on?
Not really. Now, there's a lot of things going on in that very short message. Okay?
Well, I want to know that they had a working toothbrush for the 2 years.
See, when I read it first, I thought, OK, they bought the toothbrush in June of 2022 and it stopped working in August of 2022. Yes. And then I read, no, it's 2020.
And now, it sat in a box till then?
No, they've been using it all this time, right? So it only broke last week. OK, so it's a 2-year-old toothbrush. Now, I partially understand where the person is coming from, because under consumer law, if you buy a product, it has to be fit for purpose. And if it breaks within a 2-year period under consumer under European-wide consumer legislation, you have a right to seek redress. Now, under Irish legislation, if a product breaks within 6 years of purchasing it, you have a right to redress. But that legislation comes with limitations. So let's say you buy a sofa and you spend €7,000 on your sofa, and 5 years into owning the sofa, it falls apart. You can go back to the manufacturer or the shop and say, OK, I want you to give me some redress, because the sofa is not supposed to collapse after 5 years. But there are limitations. So let's say you buy a €5 digital watch.
Yeah.
And after 5 years, the digital watch starts to malfunction. You have absolutely no leg to stand on when you go back to the shop or the manufacturer and say, I bought this watch for a fiver 5 years ago and now it's not working. Can I have my money back?
Yes.
So there are limitations on the legislation. So that's the first thing I would say. So technically speaking, under the law, she would have a right to go back to the retailer and say, can you give me redress? Now, it's not right of her to say that she's entitled to a refund, a repair or a replacement, because that's not how the law works. Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of it depends. There's a pro rata thing here. So depending on how long you've had the product, mm-hmm. how much the product cost and what's going to happen, those are two things that determine what the next steps are. So the product cost €140.
€140, yeah, marked down from €260.
That doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter.
Because
it's what
she paid €140.
For it.
Yeah. So then the question is, would you be entitled to a repair, a replacement or a refund on a product that cost €140 if you've been using it
solidly
twice a day,
every day
for 2 years?
Yes.
And the reality is no. Now, you could probably argue the toss and say, OK, well, let's hang on a second. €140, I could probably expect maybe 3 years out of that product.
Yeah.
Now, let's say if that was the agreed sum, then what you would be entitled to under the law wouldn't be €140, which is what she paid for it. It wouldn't be €70. Mm-hmm. It would be a third of €140, because she got 2 years of a functioning toothbrush. She didn't get the third year. And I'm just arguing for I don't know how long a electric toothbrush is supposed to last.
Sure.
I've never had one that lasted more than 2 years, to be honest. In fact, I've given up on the old electric toothbrushes.
And you've gone back to the old school.
Yeah, actually, you know the ones that have the little batteries?
Yeah.
And I just maybe think it's the zzz that encourages me. That makes, I'm getting an extra clean. But I have had those expensive toothbrushes. And
so are you advising now that she goes back with that kind of the suggested advice from you to see how she gets on that way? Because it sounds like she's meeting closed doors.
She is. What I would be actually advising is sometimes you have to determine how much your time is worth. And I hate to say that. So the reality is you'd be arguing the toss about whether or not you'd get £20 back from this toothbrush. Mm. And you have to decide, is it worth it as a consumer to get into a big fight with a retailer, whoever that retailer might be, over something like that? Or should I just say, OK, well, they've displeased me. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go and buy another toothbrush somewhere else
from a different
and
retailer.
I will use that toothbrush instead. And I think for a lot of people, you have to weigh up the hassle versus the realities of the law versus your time.
Putting a value on your time.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, Conor Pope, as always, lovely to chat to you. That is all we have got time for this afternoon. Sarah and Cormac are next on Drive Time. I will be back tomorrow. Have a wonderful afternoon.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.